I mean, I can't argue. I took one yesterday of Chaos.
Yeah, oh, one photo of your cat. Oh, no, you're such like a cat dad.
Hi, I'm Liz Flux.
And I'm Ben McKenzie.
It just says then go on unscripted, and I nearly like said that because it has been a morning.
I know, it has been. But I mean, this is what we do every episode of the Ook Club, which is what this is. I assume you know that, listener, because this probably isn't your first rodeo.
It's so probably named Ook Club in the title. Like, I mean, how do you get to be listening to it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is interesting. I've never asked this, but maybe you, listener, can tell us when you got into the Ook Club after you became a subscriber. Did you go back and listen to it from the first episode? I don't know. It's interesting. I tend to pick and choose a bit when I listen to bonus material from podcasts that I support. I just sort of go, what's the coolest thing? Oh, there's this thing that's like a bit from an episode that I really liked, or there's this live episode that is on a topic that I'm interested in. I don't know.
I mean, I don't have, like, because as we've talked about before, I don't listen to that many other podcasts, so I don't have a frame of reference, but I can guess from knowing my own personality that I would probably have to go back to the very beginning and listen to them in order. I know that's not how I read the Pratchett books, but there was a good reason for that. Whereas if everything is available to me, I'm a real completionist. So,
yeah, sure. No, that makes sense. Mm. But look, we are here. We're recording episode 8 of the Ook Club a week earlier than we planned, Liz. As you said, it has been a morning.
Yes, but I mean, it's been good. Like, we've gotten lots of stuff done. So we would normally right now have probably just finished recording our monthly. Are we doing a weekly podcast? And I don't know how time works.
No, we're definitely not doing a weekly podcast.
All right. Yeah, so we were going to be recording our Night Watch episode today, but we had some major technical difficulties, which we were not able to fix, so we decided to reschedule, just basically switch the two next upcoming episodes around. This is very in keeping with the feeling of Night Watch, though, with the different timelines and the future. Has it happened yet? Or it has, but it hasn't. And so, so we decided to do our Ook Club today instead of next week, and I'm kind of excited because I was ready to chat about Terry Pratchett things, and now we still get to, and that is great.
Yeah, and we get to hang out together virtually, not in person. We're still recording this remotely. It's fun. I always enjoy doing these because it's a bit looser. You know, we can talk about just stuff
like zombies. We did that zombies one, and that was great.
That was great. It was a lot of fun. Today we got there's a couple of things we wanted to talk about because we each sort of had one that I think was relevant to us for our general chat. So if you listen to the Ook Club regularly, this is not your first episode. We've never really talked about the format we've chosen, which is just sort of we have a general discussion. Then we get into a few main things that we've chosen to talk about. And then we answer some questions and share some outtakes from other episodes. So it has a bit of a structure, but it's still pretty loose. You can kind of do whatever. Actually, just before we recorded this, here's a bit of news that I wanted to drop in, something I'll talk about in a future Ook Club episode. I just today received a big board game that I backed on Kickstarter as a sort of birthday present to myself a year or two ago. It just arrived, which is exciting. It's a big box. I don't normally go in for those big box, lots of bits, lots of extras kind of pledges, but this one was a bit special. And one of the reasons it was a bit special is one of the people writing scenarios for the board game, because it's like a sort of a Dungeons and Dragons-y go on an adventure with your friends board game, is Rhianna Pratchett. So I'm going to go and open that after this, and maybe I'll talk about that next time. But I'm excited to see what her contribution is and what the board game's all about. It's called Bardsung. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be fun and cool.
Well, I'm going to have to come and stare at it, gaze upon it, like all of the... Just put my eyes right up close to it. And I'm not saying I want to play it because I am fickle with board games, because like it is just like that Auntie Donna clip where like I swing between all three of them in that. Like if it's a board game I really like and know, like once I know it, I'm like into it and I'm just like harassing everyone to play it with me. But when it's a new board game, even though if it looks really fun, I'm just like, oh, why is this so hard? Everything's difficult. I don't understand. It's too much work.
The teach is so important with board games. Yeah. Well, we now, Liz, actually, this is something I haven't updated you on yet. Pratchett now owns all of the Discworld board games, apart from the couple that are, you know, were never really in wide circulation. Because I finally got a copy of Guards, the board game, which is meant to be the worst one. So I did seriously think about skipping it.
All right, well, let's start with that one. So it's like slowly improving.
That's a good idea. That is a good idea. And then we should probably play the Clax one last, because that's supposed to be really good.
then I will force you to play some of the board games that I really like and I'm like really intense about. So in between as well.
Like which ones? Which ones?
I really like Mysterium.
Oh, Mysterium.
Yeah. Great. Oh, and I don't have to explain. You sound like you, Mysterium that's with you. Because you know all the board games, which is great. I really enjoy Mysterium and the Castles of Mad King Ludwig is one of my favorites.
Which I've only played once, but I also really enjoyed. So I'd be very keen to play that with you. Do you
have, I have a copy and I have expansions. So yeah, we should play that.
Okay.
So,
I'm excited.
And also I've got a lot of versions of Flux for obvious reasons.
Well, we've played Adventure Time Flux.
But is it a board game?
Yeah.
I think I have Monty Python Flux as well.
I've got that one, the Holy Grail one.
And Cthulhu Flux as well. There's a lot of them, so yeah.
Yeah, I've got that one. The Pirate one is probably my favorite.
Ooh,
and I haven't yet got the Doctor Who one, but I want to.
I've got the Space one that has like really thinly veiled references to a lot of like sci-fi things, so it's a good one. So,
that's
yeah.
right.
Star Flux, I think it's called Star Flux. Yeah.
You know, we didn't have as our opening topic, let's talk about board games, but I'm very happy that we did.
Yeah.
Now, because I'm excited to play board games.
We should definitely do Castles, because that is a really fun one, because it's competitive, but not in a, like, stressful way. Like, the main goal is to build a really cool castle, at least for me.
Yeah, no, it is. Like I said, I've only played it once, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and there's, like, a mold room. You know, the real weird rooms, they come up, and it's fun.
I think the mold room's in the base game, right?
Yeah.
It's not an expansion, because I think I remember that.
Well, I haven't played the expansions yet, so we can...
Oh, okay.
...discover those together, so it's going to be good.
All right, I'm excited. And I know, actually, and a friend of mine who lives down the road is the one that I've played it with before, and she might want to join us, so we can have more than two players.
We can have a really big series of castles, and it'll be great. We have to use a really big table, though, because sometimes the castles get very sprawling.
I'm a board game nerd. I have one, actually, and so does my friend who lives down the road.
You have to bring them both together.
This could work out.
It could be great.
Yeah. Okay, board games. I love it. I love that we've talked about board games so much.
Just shoehorned it in there, but it's, you know, keeping it loose.
I don't think it'll be a surprise to you, listener, that I have a lot of podcast ideas. There's a lot of podcasts I would like to make, but there's just not enough time, like, because you can't get paid to make them very much. So but I do have a games podcast that I want to make, which would be about not just board games, but other kinds of games too, but... heavy board game involvement, because I love them.
Will Wheaton's still doing his, like is his video one?
I don't think Tabletop is the show I think you're referring to, like where he just plays
like 10 years ago,
board
wasn't
games
it?
And stuff with. Yeah, I don't think he's making it anymore. It did run for quite a while, like it ran for at least like 4 or 5 years, I think. It was on the Geek and Sundry network, which I don't, not, it's sort of, it does still exist in some form, but I think it's changed a bit. Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't really looked up how that worked out or what happened.
So I watched quite a lot of them like for quite a while, but then I think I watched a super boring one time for a game I wanted to play, and I was like, I'm bored watching this and it's made me not want to play a game. I'm just going to take a break, and that break is continuing on until now. So
I absolutely recommend, if you want to watch board game videos, my number one recommendation is Shut Up and Sit Down. They're a UK bunch. They review board games on YouTube, but their review videos are always really funny. Like they put a lot of thought into them, and there's like sketches and stuff. They don't do heaps. Like they don't do like 4 a month. It's like usually 1 or 2 a month, because there's only 3 or 4 of them who make the videos, and they put a lot of time and love into them. But that means they're really worth watching.
I've got a really busy schedule of watching that one where that guy makes people eat really spicy hot sauce and see how they react, though. So
that's fair.
Which I want to go on, because I can eat very spicy hot sauce and I would annihilate that show. But yeah.
I found, to bring us back to something vaguely Pratchett related, recently my partner Anna discovered this mushroom sauce that is, I don't actually know what its country of origin is. It's in the slightly distressingly generic Asian section of our local supermarket, which doesn't really tell you anything. But anyway, it's this mushroom sauce that is made of like bits of mushroom. And there's two varieties. There's the one that's like 5 spices, and there's one that's like, garlic, and it's delicious. It's really good. It's really good on noodles, and it made me think of Wow Wow Sauce and your experiments with the mushroom paste to make it.
The concentrate. You should absolutely make that, though, because it was like concentrated mushroom. It was delightful. I went a bit too intense with that, though, because I was kind of like, I'm going to get all the moisture out of these mushrooms as physically possible, and ended up with like more than the recipe said I would. And I'm like, did I do this wrong? Did I put too much salt in it? Have I done a crime against nature? Like, what's going on? But yeah.
I mean, it sounds like it would have been
delicious.
I really want to try making it. I still haven't yet. I haven't made anything else out of Nanny Young's cookbook yet, but I will.
I'd recommend doing the concentrate and not the rest of the sauce.
Look, I mean, you're still getting something good out of it, right?
Yeah.
I think that's
fair. Yeah, just leave it for slightly longer than the recipe says, and you can absolutely squeeze the heck out of it through a strainer. Just keep pulling the spoon across it, and then you can use the mushrooms in an omelet or something.
Well, look, I was gonna save this for later, but Liz, you did give some more tips about making the Wow Wow sauce when we were talking to Joe and Francine from The Truth She'll Make You Fret, another Pratchett podcast.
I have a cooking question about the one that I'm making, actually.
One are you making?
So I'm making the Wow Wow sauce.
Ooh.
And it asks for pickled walnuts, and I've tried desperately to find that here, but it doesn't seem to be a thing unless you, on a hope and a prayer, go to a delicatessen that's, specializes in things that you can actually find it. And I was like, well, maybe I can pickle my own, but you can't even get, green walnuts here. So is it something that I could sub in Branston pickle for, or would that be a crime?
I would not use Branston pickle. I would, hang on, sorry, I'm looking at the recipe and trying to get the context of the pickled walnuts. Mm. I would sub for something like a pickled onion. You want something that's solid with a bit of crunch rather than pickle, if that makes sense.
So it's not the pickle bit that they want.
Texture concern rather than a taste concern you've got.
Yeah, you want something that tastes pickled, but you don't want something like Branston pickle where it's almost more of a sauce. You want something that's kind of solid and crunchy.
Okay, so pickled onion.
I mean, would just pickles do it? Pickled gherkins.
Instead. Yeah, you could throw in some cornichons or gherkins or something instead.
Okay. Thank you. I would have used Branston pickle otherwise, and that might have gone very badly.
I mean, it probably would have still been quite nice.
Maybe I'll do variations like you did.
Science.
Okay. 4 variations to see which one is the best.
That does sound amazing.
You're a big spicy food fan. I haven't looked to the Wild Wild Sauce recipe. Does it look painful?
It's not overly spicy.
No, there's a bit of mustard in it.
I would have thought it would have been more intense, but I have various chilies that I've got, so I might.
Maybe you can make it more intense. Yeah. Yeah. Jacked up a bit.
I mean, I saw it had mushroom concentrate and a recipe for how to make that. And I was just like, I need this now. I want to. I'm a bit of a mushroom fiend. I love
that. I highly recommend buying dried mushrooms and storing them packed in a jar of coarse salt.
Mm.
Because then you can grab out a handful of that salt for things like pretty much seasoning anything. It's amazing on eggs, but you end up with this really intense mushroomy salt. It's the best thing ever.
That sounds amazing. Okay, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, so that was pretty good, but I have done better since. But if you do end up making it or you've made it before and you've got your own advice, I'd love to hear it because I wanted a lot from that sauce, but I feel like walking away with the mushroom concentrate is a pretty good deal.
Mm. The best thing about doing that whole Hogswatch feast thing for me is that now I'm really excited about doing it again at Hogswatch this year. I don't think we've said that we are planning to do this, but I kind of really want to. There's so many other things to make. I want to make some more of the dwarf baking stuff. There's also, and I think I put this in the show notes to both the episodes we did about Nanny Og's cookbook. There's fan ones as well. And I found a really good list of fan Discworld food recipes. I mean, these are fan ones that got published, but there's some other ones too. And they look pretty great.
It's terrible that the episode maybe kind of wanted, but not really try and make celery astonishment.
No, I think it's only natural to be curious about. It's like it's one of those things that, you know, humankind should not want of. Or what's the phrase?
It was not for us.
Things we're not meant to know. It's a cosmic horror made of flesh. Or in this case, celery.
Yes, I would love to see her tackle one that turns out well. I just want that to happen. I think that would be nice.
Yeah, we'll have to get Ellie back and see if she wants to make a nice one. Hopefully it works out better for her next time. But let's get on to some Pratchett chat. Because we thought we might talk about today a few things. Do we want to do the news? Should we get the news out of the way first?
Yeah. So I guess the first news is that we were quite keen after our recent episode to perhaps do a side podcast, a tangential one about The Watch. So we know that'll possibly be controversial, but there's a lot to discuss in there that in the space we have, we couldn't get stuck into. And because we sort of followed our book format where we sort of go through things chronologically, we spent a lot more time on the first episode, which if you're holding them up, it's lower than average in quality of the overall series. So it doesn't give a good overview of our thoughts or also the series itself. So I think there's a lot to discuss in there. So it's something that we were considering doing its own series about. So six episodes. Is it six episodes? Eight episodes. I can't remember. Eight episodes. So one episode per episode. Episode.
Yeah, an episode per episode. Yeah. And I think too, I mean, I got my comedy writer critic brain on in that episode pretty heavily because there were a lot of weird choices, like from a comedy writing perspective. And I didn't engage my fanboy. I had such a lot of fun watching it brain as much as I would have liked. So I think this will be a nicer opportunity to give it a bit more room to get excited and talk about the fun stuff. But we're going to do that as a side project. And when we decided to do that and we thought that maybe there might be some other TV stuff that we could throw in there as well, because a lot of the adaptations are so faithful that it doesn't really feel worth doing a whole episode, like about the Hogfather TV show. Like there's not a lot, like there's a few things you could mention, but there's not really like a whole episode of Pratchett in it, I don't think. Like if you've listened to the one about the book, you know, we're only going to talk about the choices of the adaptation and that's not interesting to everyone. So we can do those sort of things in this format as well. And when we decided that, you came up with the best name for this little side project, yeah, Liz.
Well, that's very kind of you. I thought we could call it Terry Vision because it's just so the visual stuff of it. So Pratchett does Terry Vision is potentially coming your way in the very near future.
Yeah. And we'll make, like I said, it'll be a side project. So it'll be like a separate podcast feed is my intention. And there'll be like a season of just 8 episodes talking about The Watch, which we'll put out when we've done them all. So it'll be in the nearish future, but not immediately because there's a lot of work in putting it together. But we'll put that work outside of the main podcast work. But look out for it. And if there are any things, like if you want us to talk about anything, if you want to watch it alongside us, or if you've watched it now because you've heard us talk about it and you hadn't before and you want to ask questions, get in there. Do it. We'll do a few. I think this will be a more focused podcast. I already have a format in mind because I've done a episode-by-episode TV podcast before. I did one for Star Trek Discovery during its second season. We didn't end up doing it for the third season or the fourth season for various reasons, because it's a lot of work doing it week by week when you're doing it when the show is coming out. Like, it's slightly too much work, to be honest. It's very difficult. So we won't be doing it. Obviously, you know, the show's been out for over a year at this point, so it'll be a lot more relaxed, which will be good. But also, I'm very excited about this because I got the Blu-ray of the show. I previously only had the DVD. I got the Blu-ray so I could watch it in proper definition, even if it goes off the Stan streaming service. And the first episode on the Blu-ray, but not on the DVD, has audio commentary.
Huh. I love an audio commentary.
And I don't know who it's by. I assume it's by the crew, probably Simon Allen. So I'm really intrigued to hear who's on it and what they've got to say.
Now, the best audio commentary is when it's like a member of the crew, like either the director or the main writer, and an actor who is not necessarily the main actor. Like the best one I ever heard was for Knight's Tale, and it was the director Brian Helgeland and Paul Bettany, and it was just so good because like Paul Bettany's not in the whole film, like he's in a lot of it, but like the lead actor like is in everything. Whereas if you're like prominent but not in every scene, you can give a better sort of. So yeah, I don't know. It made me love the movie even more. If you get the chance to listen to that, like maybe there's something horrifying on there that doesn't hold up well. But it's just because I don't know if you've seen A Knight's Tale. There's just Paul Bettany has to do a lot of stuff, and he enters that film completely naked. And so hearing him describe the things that happened to him in that scene, and also just like no embarrassment as his like butt appears on the screen, he's doing an audio commentary. There's a comment about tape in a sensitive area. It's just it's the quality stuff that you want to listen to.
Yeah, I have a feeling you've mentioned this on the podcast before.
Because I love it.
I've only ever seen Knight's Tale once. It was so long ago now. But now I'm keen to watch it again and get the commentary somehow from somewhere.
Yeah. I was going to be like, oh, I just got a Video Easy. I'm like, wait, that's not a thing anymore, is it? So, and I'm pretty sure that's where I heard the library might have it.
I was part of an attempt to break the world record for the number of audio commentaries on a DVD. And it was for a short film that a friend of mine made, and one of the stretch goals when they crowdfunded it was extra audio commentaries. And so me and the Splendid Chaps podcast crew actually came in and did it because it was a time travel film. It's called I'm You, Dickhead. So it kind of ties into the Night Watch, the next book we'll do on the main podcast, but it's the guy goes back in time, but he's very shallow. So he's just going back in time to try and teach himself to play the guitar so he can pick up chicks. Like that's his whole thing. And he's kind of gross.
That's basically the plot of Yesterday, but better.
Yeah.
Yesterday. What a terrible film. Sorry, Beg.
Oh, it's such a cool, it's such an interesting concept, but it sounds like the execution from a script level. Like it doesn't sound like the actors are at fault here, but it's just the storyline is pretty bad.
It was well cast and all of that. Like, I'm not going to do like a here's 10 minutes on why I hate Yesterday. No. But it's stressful because, well, not stressful, disappointing because it's one of those ones that does have a great premise and it does fail in its execution. And that makes it even worse than just being a film that's not great. But I think it's a writing problem because the pacing was strange and it felt like someone had a vision for it and someone else came in and tried to fit it into something that it wasn't. And so
yeah,
you can kind of feel the story straining against the edges of this cage that sort of seems like to have like clamped down on top of it. And I think it must have just been very frustrating for the people making it and in it. I'm projecting a lot onto this, but yeah, there's just like a terrible love story in there that doesn't make sense and the characters are inconsistent about things. There's just they throw in a John Lennon scene that is just so cringe. It's just, but yeah, it feels like too many cooks.
That's disappointing.
It is disappointing, but the actors are good.
Well, look, let's move on from disappointment then. let's talk about stories we do like. Just while we're talking about films though, I did see some test footage from The Amazing Maurice that got, I don't know if it was leaked or if someone was sharing it officially. I couldn't find it again to show it to you, Liz, but
just describe it to me and I would just react as though I'm watching it.
It was animation of Maurice.
Mm-hmm.
And it
crazy
was
crazy old Maurice.
Crazy.
Sorry. Oh, no. not that one.
Flashback okay. To that episode of Pratchett when you and Michelle Law was saying that over and over again. And I was like, I don't remember this episode of The Simpsons. I feel so left out. But the, it's
crazy,
it's Maurice.
Crazy old Maurice. Sorry. Stop.
The conceit of the test footage is that there's a cat auditioning to be Maurice in the film. And so it's animation of Maurice, the Maurice model, but there's like a kid trying to prompt the cat to perform and it won't do it. And then it's like that old Warner Brothers cartoon of the frog, you know, the frog that sings, but never when anyone else is there, only for the guy who found the singing frog. And he keeps trying to get famous and rich by showing it off to people. And then it will just never perform whenever there's other people watching. So it drives him crazy. Classic Warner Brothers cartoon. This is a bit like that. The kid who's trying to prompt the cat to perform leaves the camera running and exits the room. And while the kid's not there, the cat does all this acting in front of the camera. It's very over the top and crazy. And not really like in character as Maurice. I'm not even sure if it's Hugh Laurie doing the voice, who is going to be doing the voice, or who presumably has already recorded the voice because it's been in production now for a little while. In case you haven't realised, this episode was recorded at the end of February 2022 and has taken a while to get edited and published for your ears. Since then, a few things have happened, including the release of a proper trailer for the Amazing Maurice film. It's good. We'll put a link to it in the episode notes. Yeah, it was kind of fun. I like it, and I think I'm going to like the movie, but I still feel that it does not look like the Maurice in my mind. Like, he's a big, fluffy ginger cat, and in my mind, Maurice really needs to be a scraggly, like, street cat. And I guess I'm also a little disappointed that the character design just looks like all of the DreamWorks films. I still think it'll be great, but I think going in, I'm like, I really wanted this to be its own thing, to look like its own thing, instead of looking like the people who made The Lorax made this. Which is kind of what it looks like. And, but I'm optimistic. Like, the voice cast is amazing. The Pratchett Estate seems really happy with it. And, it'll be interesting to see how they've adapted it to film. And I just got my fingers crossed they don't make it way less dark. Like, cause that's one of my favorite things about that book. And I think it is like still one of my favorite Pratchett things of all time. Like, I really loved it so much. So I'm probably a bit over invested, but I think the film hopefully will be great.
Yeah, I think Hugh Laurie can also, like, do a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, like, the rest of the cast is amazing. Like, Emilia Clarke is in there. I think Gemma Arterton, David Tennant doing the same voice he did on radio.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. There's just a few things about it that I'm like, oh, look, in my mind, in my perfect adaptation of this, it would look a bit different. But that's okay. I'm not the one with the budget trying to make it work for a mainstream audience. So, yeah, I'm hoping it preserves some of the things that make the book great. And speaking of books, the other bit of news, in case you missed it, is that we decided to... I say we. I kind of did this without consulting you, Liz. I hope you're okay with it. We haven't really talked about it.
No, actually, there's a tweet going around about why are podcasts always two friends? I want it to be two enemies. Now we're two enemies.
Okay. Oh, no. Okay, well, the first shot in the Ben-Liz war of 2022... was me creating the Pratchett Reading Challenge for 2022. And this was kind of prompted by a couple of things. One was me wanting to read more books outside of the podcast, because like when we first started the podcast, and I think I've talked about this on the Ute Club before, it really reinvigorated my love of reading. Like I've always loved reading, but I often get too busy to read books and I end up reading a lot of other things that I have to read for work and research and all that kind of stuff. And making myself read Pratchett books every month reminded me how much I enjoy reading. And also it was nice to read a book that I wasn't making copious notes for, because that does slow you down quite a bit. And so I got back into reading, and then I kind of slowed down again the last year or two during the pandemic. I think, you know, like a lot of people, I struggled with having mental energy and brain space to remember things and do things that weren't essential. So where I've ended up is not reading as much as I'd like. And so I tried to start this year really getting into it. And one of the things I did was ditch Goodreads, which is owned by Amazon, and move across to a different reading tracking app, a newer one called the Storygraph, which is sort of independently run by a really great team of folks and seems really cool and dedicated to making a good experience. I mean, it's still, it's relatively early days, so there's a few things that they're still working on, but it's pretty great already. And one of the things you can do on there is create your own reading challenges and let people join them. So I thought, well, why don't I do this? It'll help me pick some more things to read, and maybe some of our listeners and subscribers would like to join in. And I've already read one book for it.
What was the book?
I read a book called Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir.
I'd like to know more about this book. You can't just say book and then not tell me more about a book.
I'm sorry. It is a weird sort of sci-fi fantasy mashup. It's also funny. It's a comedy.
We don't like that. Horror. We don't like comedy or sci-fi.
It's a comedy, horror, sci-fi, fantasy book. It's great. It's got a bit of everything. Basically, the premise is it's set in sort of a space empire. The space empire runs on necromancy. That's its power that it has that makes it a power in the universe. And there's 9 noble houses that serve the undying emperor. And they get this invitation to go to the planet of the emperor for a special purpose, which I won't spoil. But that means that the heir of the house, who is a mighty necromancer of each of one of the houses, and their cavalier, who's like their warrior bodyguard, have to go together. But the 9th house doesn't have a cavalier because the cavalier they have is kind of useless. And instead, the main character, Gideon, who is kind of like a foundling, like she's an orphan who lives on the planet. It's not really one of them, but has been raised by them, is not a noble, but has been taught how to fight. She basically gets convinced by Harrowhark, the heir of the 9th house, to pretend to be her cavalier so she can go and do this thing. And that's the premise. I think the quote on the cover is something like, lesbian necromancers explore a gothic cathedral in space. And that's pretty accurate. And it's got a great comic voice. There's some real like horror and gore and stuff, but there's also some really funny lines. I will say it really doesn't hold your hand. Like it just sort of gets on with it and you have to kind of keep up with what's happening. And it's got like a list of characters at the start so you don't get lost with who's who, because there's a lot of characters that you meet. I've already got the sequel. I'm about to start reading the sequel. And there's going to be 4 books in the series. So I really enjoyed it.
I should probably get stuck more into it, into the challenge, I mean. And also this book, which sounds great, because I gave up on Goodreads a long time ago. I just have my spreadsheets. So, yeah, I should probably actually get involved in our reading challenge.
I mean, look, you should do whatever you enjoy. I mean, it's not a reading challenge where you have to read specific books. It's a reading challenge that has prompts for you to choose your own books to try and get you to choose some things that you maybe wouldn't have read otherwise. And it is specifically for Pratchett listeners who have read a lot of Pratchett, but here's some prompts that might help you find some new authors that you enjoy. So the one that I read this one for was a comic novel by somebody else, as in a funny novel. And there's 5 other prompts. There's only 6 of them because I was like, well, you're already reading somewhere between 6 and 12 books for us because we're doing a lot more short stories and non-book things now, but we still will read at least 6 or 7, probably more like 8. I don't know. I can't remember what's in our schedule, but probably like at least 6 to 8 novels a year still. So this is an extra 6 books, so we didn't want to overload people.
Yeah.
That's good.
I've also been reading books about women necromancers because since Garth Nix came on our podcast like at the end of last year, I have gone back and started rereading his books because I read them when I was at school, all the ones that were out at that stage from the Old Kingdom series. And so this year, his latest one of that series, which is a prequel, came out and we were reading that before the podcast, and that prompted me to go back to the beginning. So I have read Sabriel, Lyriel, and Abhorson this year, which are all set in the Old Kingdom, and it follows basically these lineages, mostly focuses on one lineage or station called the Abhorsen, which is a necromancer whose job it is to keep the wall between the dead and alive solid. There are a lot of bad necromancers around, but they're the good one, basically, I'm simplifying it a lot, basically keeps the world in order and stops the dead from overrunning things and is a very important part of keeping things, you know, not horrifying. Mm. And I wasn't sure how it'd go, like going back to reading books that I really loved as a teenager. And it's been brilliant because I've gotten so many new things out of them that I just didn't pick up the first time around because I think as a kid, I was just a hungry reader. And so I would tear through books probably a little bit too fast. You get the story, you get the excitement of it. But you sometimes miss little details and things. And so it's been nice sort of going back through them slowly. And it also has been cool because it taps into that spark of joy that you got in the earlier stages of reading where you would go to the library and you just choose a book at random that you thought would be good. And while you still do that now, and I still enjoy reading, it's different because there's kind of that pure joy of when you're just starting out and realizing how many books are out there and how you can basically choose a pathway through books for the rest of your life that will suit you. Mm. And it's just sort of everything's opening up and that's exciting. Whereas now we know what there is. And I've sort of pushed into the bit where I'm like, oh, I'm going to die not having read all of the books that I want to read. Whereas when you're like 12 or 15, you're like, I could just read everything and that's great. So yeah, basically the long story short is that's been great. And I cannot recommend rereading books you love enough, which should be obvious from the fact that we have a Terry Pratchett reread podcast.
We're mostly rereading stuff we've read before. Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, going back over these books has been great. And it's odd that we both just happen to be reading books about women necromancers.
Yeah. Well, Anna, my partner, also went back. She's a big Garth Nix fan as well and read those same three books in order to read the prequel. I still haven't read them, but...
Oh, you'd love them.
It's on my list because one of the other prompts for the challenge is read a book by an author we've mentioned on the podcast, which can include a guest. So that's, I think, the first... Sabriel's the first one, isn't it?
Yeah, Sabriel, Lyriel, Leonard of Horsen, and then there's Clariel and Golden Hand, which I had not read previously because I think they came out like when I was sort of like heading towards exams and things. So that's next on my list.
So I think there was a bit of a gap between the first three and those two. Is that right?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a gap between like all of them.
Because Tercel and Elenor, which is the prequel, that's come out like nearly 25 years after the first one. Because there's like one of these cool 25th anniversary editions of the first three books, which is kind of awesome.
I want them all.
Cool editions of books are a lot of fun. You know, Liz, it's getting towards April now.
Oh, my God.
Because it's nearly the end of February. I know.
It's still December. Terrible. It's okay.
I'm sorry to mention this. But in April is when the fancy Dunn Manifestan edition of the Ultimate Discworld Companion comes out, which is the reference work for the Discworld, which I have to admit, like, I've been reading. I've got the paperback because it came out in paperback, like the regular edition in November. But I was reading it and I was sort of looking up a few entries while I was making notes for Nightwatch. It's a bit of a weird one. Like, it's a reference book, but you can't really use it as a reference book. Like, if you look up the entry for Casa, it's like quite nicely written, but it's kind of jokes about who he is without really telling you fully who he is and what happens to him. So if you just want to remember what happens to Casa, if you've read the book, this might jog your memory. But if you haven't read the book, you can't use it as a reference to understand who Casa is. I'm looking forward to sort of delving into it a bit more and trying to figure out more what it's really about. But the fancy edition, which we have ordered, thanks to you, subscribers, because you have funded us to be able to do this, has got some extra material in it and some extra illustrations and is a very beautiful book. So kind of what I hope we'll be able to do with stuff like that is through your generosity and having the money coming in to be able to buy some of this stuff we wouldn't normally buy, we can talk about it either on the main podcast or here on Ook Club and share it with you. So you can be like, oh, cool. I would not have bought that, but now I know about it. So that's probably something that'll come up. We'll talk about it eventually. And of course, there's the other news that we haven't talked about much on the podcast is the official biography of Terry Pratchett has been announced. It's going to be published in, I think it's September. And there's a fancy Waterstones edition, which has a bit of extra material in it, which I'm keen to get my hands on too. So that'll be interesting. Be interesting to sort of read that and The Magic of Terry Pratchett, Mark Burroughs' unofficial biography, which is very good if you haven't read it. I haven't read it cover to cover, but I've delved into it and read a lot of stuff in it as research and reference for the podcast. And it's good. Yeah.
So many books, so many good books. I'm going to die before I can read all of them.
Well, that's all right. Well, you've read books that would count for at least one or two of the prompts in the challenge now, Liz. You should get in there.
Yeah, I should get in there.
You're ahead.
All right.
You'll probably finish it in 2 weeks and I'll be like languishing. I won't finish it until near the end of the year.
Well, I've been like reading lots of books at the same time. It's been quite nice.
Yeah, I've been reading lots of books at the same time. I haven't finished all of them yet. I'm still reading the new translation of Beowulf, which won the Hugo last year. That's really fun. But I'm about halfway through, I think. I sort of took a pause from it because I'm like, I should read this cover to cover. And I was like, oh, but I really want to finish Gideon the Ninth and I've got Pratchett books to read. But I think I'll finish that next.
How do you balance, like, if you're reading multiple books at the same time? Like, do you have, like, I'll just pick up which one I feel like? Do you, like, have different situations? Like, is one your commuting book or that you read in different rooms? Is one your before bed book?
It's a bit, I think it's about mood for me. I think it's what am I in the mood for? There's usually the one that I'm really, like, has really gripped me. Like, I really want to know. And for me, that recently, that was Gideon the Ninth. I was like, oh, I'm really enjoying this plot. I don't know where it's going to go. And the characters are funny and cool. And I want to see what happens. So I got really into that. And that was my, like, I want to read it as much as possible. And then I got to the end. And I'm like, I need to immediately order the sequel and read the sequel. So there's that. And there's ones that I enjoy from a sort of enjoying the prose, like enjoying the writing. Like, not that I didn't enjoy the writing in Gideon the Ninth. I thought it had a really unique voice, which is one of the things I liked about it. But the poetry of this new translation of Beowulf is kind of like something I want a bit of brain space to enjoy. So I tend to read it in bits when I'm sort of sitting quietly. And we've tried to have a few reading days here at our house where we've like baked nice things the day before and then just sat on the couch as reading, like on a day on the weekend, which has been really nice. And that's a good one to read then when I can sort of fully concentrate on it and not feel like I've got to try and get through it. Because it is, I mean, like, you don't want to read Beowulf expecting, like, a rollicking great adventure. Like, there is adventure in there, but it's also, like, it's a poem from a long time ago. Like, even a good translation of it, it's still got some pacing issues by today's standards. But it helps when some of it is now funny because there's some funny bits. Like, it starts with the line, bro, tell me we still know how to talk about kings, which is just genius to stick bro in there. It's a really good translation. But yeah, so I guess it's about mood for me. How about you? How do you choose which one you're going to read when?
It's a bit of like bit of both, I think. Like sometimes I'll be heading up to bed and I'll take like 3 books with me, so I have like the option of which one I want to read, which is like just make a decision while you're downstairs. Like you don't have to carry books up and down that your cats will stand on and then like hurl onto the floor. But
I'm the same.
Usually I have like a book that I have to read on by a certain time. Sometimes that's one of our books that we're doing. Sometimes it's a book for a review. And then I'll balance that with a book that's just like from my list of things that I'm reading, not for anything, just for me. So I do kind of partition it off. Like the book before bed is usually just the book that I want to read, unless it's like the book that I'm doing for work and I'm running out of time and I have to read that one. I've recently started having a book for the exercise bike, which is one of the dorkiest things I think.
Is it an audio book or are you reading a physical book?
Reading a physical book, which makes it just like you're this big nerd sitting on an exercise bike holding a book. But I can recommend Agatha Christie books for that because they are very gripping that you forget that you hate exercising is kind of a good one. And because I started borrowing books from like ebooks from the library, you can hold a tablet on the exercise bike and it's easier. But I don't know if I told you this one time, I was running quite far behind on when we were doing Johnny and the Bomb. So I ended up reading that one on the treadmill. Which is good because it has bigger print. But it was dangerous and I probably shouldn't have. But yeah.
Oh, Liz.
Yeah, that was a good time. There are audiobooks, I know. And I think actually Steve had said that he listened to the audiobook of that one. Anyway, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say. It's just there's books for different situations that suit different things. Sometimes, like if I have to read a book by a deadline, I will set alarms so that you know how far through it you should be by the time your alarm goes off. That's not really like an enjoyment thing. That's just a discipline thing, I guess. But yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I tend to get stuck on tasks that I feel like I have to complete. And I'm lucky that the only books in my life that feel a little bit like that are the Pratchett ones. And because I already know I enjoy his writing, it's never really felt like a chore. But it is very slow because I make a lot of notes. And I've tried various different methods to make those notes. At the moment, my main thing is sticking these reusable plastic sort of sticky tab things in the book and then going back and writing the notes about them afterwards, which gives me a bit more time to do it. and means I can read the book a bit faster, because I can still do the podcast without having written all the notes, but I can't do the podcast without having read all the book, you know?
Yeah.
So it's good to try and balance that.
Well, your notes are always very good. Like, isn't I realized that I wasn't really reading my notes, and so I adjusted how I did notes accordingly, because I was taking a lot of notes, even if they're dot points, but I realized that there's only a few of them that I would refer to during or after the episode. So I changed how I did it a little bit.
I think that's fair enough. Like, I don't think I refer to them that much while we're recording an episode. It's more that having written them kind of solidifies my thinking. And I think the ones that I find the most useful are the notes about the plot, because I sort of take the lead in recapping the plot, sometimes in too much detail, if I'm going to be transparently honest. And I'm trying to be a bit less about that, because we'll get to the details that are important in the discussion, and I don't need to surface them while doing the plot. But that's the one I find most useful, because I don't want to make mistakes or forget things or get things in slightly the wrong order. And sometimes, because of the way Pratchett writes his plot, which is more what serves what he wants to do with the characters and the comedy sometimes than it is about something that's very tightly plotted, although he doesn't tend to leave, you know, plot holes or mistakes. It's just more that it's about what's happening with the characters than about the broader narrative. Sometimes it can get a bit intricate because a lot of things are happening at once. Yeah, but it's good. And I've tried to sort of adjust and learn what the best note-taking method is for me. Yeah, and it's been fun. It's been fun to do that. But we should, I mean, look, this has been a great chat. I always love talking about books and how we read them on this, because it's changed over time, you know, and I think we experience them very differently, whether we're reading them for the podcast or just for fun. And it's been nice to get back into reading them just for fun. Because as you were saying, you take multiple books upstairs. I do that. And there's no reason to. Just pick one. Pick one.
Just add them on top of the stack that's already upstairs, which is like, you're taking them upstairs, but there's already books there. It's just...
Yeah.
The layer of books that just doesn't get read, but there's good intentions.
Yeah. That's all right. But we should get into some listener questions, I think. Because we got a really great one, which wasn't specifically sent for Oot Club, but it didn't really seem to fit in any of the other episodes.
This one comes from St. Ungulant. It's all about how Terry Pratchett is all across internet culture and being aware of lots of things. So St. Ungulant's saying, I feel he'll be a regular listener of the show. Would the podcast be different if you knew he was listening? So would the podcast be different if we knew Terry Pratchett was listening?
When this question came in over Twitter, I was like, I had not even thought about this. I think the answer would have to be yes, right?
Have you seen that Monty Python sketch from their TV show where they go, oh, we've had news that the Queen is going to tune in to this episode, and they keep mentioning it across. It's like they're standing in front of like big red curtains, and they keep coming back to that, and they go, we've just heard that she's tuned in, and they stop doing whatever silly sketch they're doing, and they sort of like, I can't remember what they're doing. They get all formal and awkward and possibly start singing the national anthem. I feel like that accurately sums up what I would be like if I knew Terry Pratchett was listening to our podcast.
It'd be so weird. It would be really weird.
I'd love it, but also I'd just be so long-distance starstruck.
Yeah, I mean, he was very engaged with fans online, right? I mean, I think that was easier in the early days when only a very small subset of fans were on the internet, because his big days of interacting with fans online were back in the Usenet newsgroup days when, sure, there were maybe hundreds of people posting on there, but that was it. Like, not tens of thousands. And it was a different kind of discussion. Like, you had to seek it out and join it. It wasn't easy necessarily. And I think internet discourse, I hate that word. Sorry to anyone who listens to The Disc Course, which is another Terry Pratchett podcast. I don't mean to disparage them. I just don't like using the discourse in that way. But the way we talk about things on the internet has changed, particularly in fan culture. I mean, there's always been arguments and people talking about this, that, and the other. But if you like, look at, you know, say Discworld Reddit. Hello, anyone who is a subscriber and also reads the Discord Reddit. It's a different kind of conversation to you would see on other platforms. The Discord Reddit's quite good, actually, though. It's very nice. But, where am I going with this? I guess where I'm going is I don't know that he would still be keeping up with everything online. I don't think he was. He was still here. His interaction with Twitter was fairly minimal. And I don't know if he was a podcast listener or if he listened to reviews, which is, I guess, kind of the bucket that we would fit in for an author. This was something that sort of cropped up for me when we were doing the Watch episode, Liz. I don't know how you felt about this, but and towards the end, I think I sort of said, you know, we've been very critical, but we have to remember that people who made this were not trying to make something bad. Like, they were trying to make the best decisions they could and make something good. And I'm sure they made all of the decisions they did for very good reasons. But I think if we knew Pratchett was listening, it'd be very difficult to be critical of the books.
I've been thinking about this, and like, I stick by what I said, that I would be kind of like the awkward Monty Python, the Queen is listening sort of thing initially, because, you know, because he's clearly someone we both very much respect, and it would mean a lot to know that he had any concept that that I exist. That would be like,
absolutely.
But in terms of how the podcast is and the way we speak, I agree with Ben in that it's hard to criticize. I think if you know the person is going to be listening. However, I don't think the actual podcast, once I got over my starstruckness, would change, because this is something I try to bring into my work as a critic across like books and film and TV and opera and all of these things, is that if I'm writing something critical, I think, would I say this to this person's face if they came to me and were like, can you justify this? Like if I was put in a situation where I had to look the person in the eye and stand by my opinion, would I? And if I wouldn't, I wouldn't write it down. Like, because if you can't say it to the person, if it's not constructive, why are you putting it out there? And so that's something I take into all my criticism. And I think everything I've said on this podcast, I would say to him. Like, I think it's fair, and we can stand by it. It's not always comfortable, but I think because, like, that makes it sound like we're saying like bad things about him all the time, which we're not. I think because he writes great stuff and we love it all. But
yeah, I mean, things come up in the books that you're like, I think we know better as a culture and a society now that this is a harmful message, whereas back then it was seen as harmless fun, you know?
Yeah.
Like something like, for example, the endless stream of fat jokes about certain characters in some of the books. Do you really need those? Would you make those now? I mean, maybe you would. I don't think so, though. Like, I think, you know, in later books, they don't crop up that much.
I think we are fair.
Yeah, I think so. And I think even with some of the books that we've been more critical of or haven't liked as much, like, say, Interesting Times. And again, you know, would he write it again if he had the chance now? That's a question you can't know the answer to. And it's difficult enough to answer when you're still alive. I think books are a kind of unique form of art. Well, not unique, but they feel a bit different because they're primarily the work of one person. Like, you'll have editors and there'll be other people involved, but it's mostly, like, when you read a Terry Pratchett book, that's mostly Terry Pratchett's work and decisions. And particularly when he's famous, like, editors are not going to be able to tell him, you can't make these jokes. Like, he'll have arguments with his editors. And as we know, he had arguments about some of the stuff he wanted to include in the Johnny books, for example, and he won those arguments. So we know that that's largely him. And whereas when you know, critique something like The Watch, we're critiquing what ends up on the screen, which is the result of a lot of different hands and a lot of different people's work. And look, you know, I think listening back to that episode, I probably come across too harsh. I didn't spend enough time talking about the things I liked about the show. But the things that I identified as not liking about it or thinking that they made really weird decisions that I didn't think worked, I still have to stand by that. Like, I still look at it and go, that's a really weird comedy decision. But I don't know who made that decision. I don't know if it was written that way in the script or if it was a director's decision on the day or if it was something someone did in the editing later on or if it was, you know, a producer came in and saw the rushes and said, reshoot that, we don't like it that way. I don't know. And so it feels slightly less personal, even though I know, you know, and I think this was the other thing, thinking about it afterwards, I was like, you know, if I'd written an episode of that show, I don't know if I'd enjoy listening to that episode of the podcast, but then they might not have enjoyed watching the episode on TV either because it might not have ended up how they wanted to, and we just don't know. So it's a bit of a different thing.
You're right that we'd fall into, like, I guess the review category. I don't think of us as, like, reviewing the books. Like, that's part of what we do. It would be more review than anything else, I guess. And reviews are not for the creators. And that is actually one of my big bugbears about book reviews and things. Like, with rare exceptions, I think that if you have written a review, you shouldn't be like tagging in the author because the review is not for them. And again, there are always exceptions. I'm usually a little bit suspicious when someone posts, hey, I've written a review of this book, and then they tag the author in it, because I'm like, especially if they are a writer themselves. It's a complicated thing, and I'm worried I'm not doing this enough nuance, but criticism is a big topic. But my key thing is that you're not doing it for the author. You're doing it for the literary community, for readers, for the wider conversation. You're not part of an author's PR or you shouldn't be. Like, of course, like, a good review can be then used by PR people for the book, but your primary goal isn't to advertise someone's book. You're there to look at it critically as a piece of art. And if you like it, great. If you don't, that's also valid if you can stand by your opinion, but it's easy for that line to get lost and a lot of people end up falling down the I'm part of the PR machine of it all, and that's not what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, in a similar way, our audience is obviously not Terry Pratchett or even the Terry Pratchett estate. Although if you are listening under some pseudonym and are subscribing to the podcast, wow, we're very honored. Thank you very much. But our audience is Pratchett fans, which is weird because that's not even like the audience that you have as a critic, right? Your audience as a critic generally is people who are interested in the art form you're critiquing and want to know about a specific piece, whether that's a book or a painting or a play or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I think we would remember that, because even if Pratchett was listening, our audience isn't Pratchett. It's you, listener. It's you.
If critics just, as in like, and I'm not going to do my whole talk about like what critic culture should be. That's a whole separate thing. But yeah.
Yeah.
Healthy criticism is necessary for healthy literary culture is it. So.
I agree. But what a great question. Thank you so much, St. Ungulant. Really had to think about that. I have no idea whether, I mean, and I think it's a separate question, like whether he actually would listen to podcasts and whether he'd listen to more than one, because like when we started, there was only one other one. And in fact, they were kind of on, I don't know if they were on a break at the time, but Radio Morpork, which was the only other one doing this at the time, had a couple of really long breaks. And I think one of them was around the time we started. So we were kind of the only one for a little while. And then they came back and, but now there's like a dozen different ones. And listener, if you're interested in how that works and whether you want to listen to multiple ones, I have been working on a little side project to document them all, which is almost ready for me to show to the public. I've still got a bit more work to do on it, but it's nearly there. This is another thing that's happened since this episode was recorded. I've released this project. It's called the Guild of Recappers and Podcasters, and you've probably already heard about it on the main Pratchett podcast. Just in case, it's a website that documents and indexes all the Pratchett-related podcasts I can find. I'm still adding more as we go, although I think I found most of the ones that are really dedicated to Terry Pratchett. Anyway, there's a link to it on our website under More in the main menu, and there's also a link just on the front page. But if you're impatient or you're on your phone, you can just type in guild.pratchettpodcast.com. If you use the site, please do let me know. I don't get any visitor stats from it, and I'd love your suggestions of podcasts that I've missed. But there's so much now, particularly in the last few years, that I don't think as an author you'd be able to keep up with it all. You'd have to make some choices, even if you wanted to listen to people talking about and dissecting your work.
I absolutely would not want to, because I'd worry that it would change how I think and how I do, because it just do weird circuits to my brain, but everyone's brain works differently and there's one to feedback differently, if it is indeed feedback that you could consider. So yeah, I don't know.
It's difficult too, because like most of my, like as a person making things, and I don't know if you feel in the same boat, Liz, but I've always been doing it on a small enough scale that there is no, like there's no agent or producer who is a bit removed and is a middle person who can listen to that and pluck out the good bits of reviews to stick on posters or whatever. Like it has to be me. Like I'm the producer of my own work. And so, you know, I do read things like the reviews that people leave on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever, good or bad. And most of them have been very good. Let's not talk about the one bad one, because it was kind of ridiculous. And you know, that feedback sometimes does tell us useful things. And, you know, we're very grateful for those of you who are listeners and subscribers who have emailed us to give us feedback about the podcast, because we do it for you. If we're not doing what you enjoy or what you're hoping that we'll do, well, then we need to have a think about that. I mean, we obviously also have our own voice and opinions, and that's hopefully why you listen to us. We're not going to compromise on telling our truth. I mean, that sounds like we're doing something much more significant than we are. But when we talk about Terry Pratchett, we're going to say what we love about Terry Pratchett, and we're going to express the things that we feel are not so great about a particular book as well. Yeah, I feel like I've gone off the track there. I don't know where I was going. But anyway, it was a really good question and a nice one to think about.
All right. So this one comes from Belle via Discord. Other than for Pratchett or school, are there any books you've had to read for a particular reason, such as a book club or work or a very insistent friend that you otherwise wouldn't have read but then really enjoyed?
I feel like you surely have got some good answers for this, Liz. Is there multiple ones?
There's quite a few. Like, as in, I have lots because I do read books for review, and I also have judged a few literary awards But there's so many that I don't think I would have read that I absolutely ended up loving. I'm just trying to look at my spreadsheet.
I've been in a few book clubs where we took turns choosing books, and I did for that read some books that I wouldn't have otherwise read, I'm sure. And I really enjoyed a couple of them. What was the book called? I think it was Lexicon, it was called. I have to admit, looking at the book and going, what is this about? I don't know about this. But then when I actually sat down and read it, I was like, oh, this is kind of a cool thriller. And it wasn't my favorite book of all time, but I really enjoyed it. I had a good time. And there was a book called The Shining Girls, I think, by Lauren Bukes, who's a South African writer, I think, if I'm remembering rightly. And it's a horror, kind of slightly fantastical book, which is totally not, I'm really not a horror fan, and it's not the sort of thing that I would normally read. Again, I didn't necessarily love it and it wasn't my favorite book of all time, but I did enjoy that. I think the ending was a bit weird, but apart from that, I remember quite enjoying it. How about you? What's top of your list of these, Liz?
I've got three because I've looked at my spreadsheet. There's one that sprang to mind straight away, and then I was like, there's something recently. So I'll do the one that immediately sprang to mind. A couple of years ago, I was one of the judges for the Victorian Premier's Literary Award Prize for Fiction. And so you get sent over 100 books to read. They just show up at your house and you make your way through them. And then with the other judges, you choose who's going to be the shortlist and the winner. And so there's a lot of books there that I just would not have gotten around to because it's just a sample of Australian books over the previous year. One of the books that has stuck with me, there's so many great ones in that batch, but there's one that stuck with me because I know I would never have picked it up. I wouldn't have probably looked at it twice. It was called The Rich Man's House by Andrew McGann. It was a big, thick, hefty boy of a book. It is a brick of a book. So it is a bit of a commitment. I think I've talked about it previously, and it is a weird mix of kind of an Agatha Christie horror where everyone is in this strange, secluded rich man's house up next to a fictitious mountain that's four times the size of Everest. But it's sort of a horror, a crime story with supernatural elements to it, and it's just so well crafted. It's a thriller, and you're tense the whole time, and it's a big page turner as well. And he's got little asides in it that could have been their own short stories. And it's just beautifully crafted. And he apparently wrote it when he was dying of pancreatic cancer. So he knew that he would never see it published. And at the beginning of it, there's this sort of, I'm sorry if it's a bit rough. I'm not going to be around for the edit. Sort of letter at the beginning. And I went into it being okay, well, there'll be some chunky bits because it's a huge book. But no, it's actually, in my opinion, perfectly paced, done really well. It's just, it's a book that stuck with me, and it hasn't got the most striking of covers either. So it has a lot of things going against it, that it's thick. Its cover doesn't grab you immediately. It's called an ambiguous name, The Rich Man's House. The rich man is called Mr. Richman, which is hilarious, and I love that.
Just like in the Muppet movie.
So good.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, that's one, and I also really recommend it. It's actually a really interesting one. But for more recent ones, I recently read in December Cloud Street by Tim Winton, the one that a lot of people did at school. And so I'd heard from a lot of friends, that book that we had to do at school, and I would have never picked it up. I went to see my mom, and it was sitting there on her chair, and she's like, oh, it's actually quite good. I'm like, oh, I've heard it's not. And she's like, it is. Why don't you read it? I'm like, I'm only here for 3 days, and it's a huge book. And then I picked it up, and I couldn't stop reading it, and it's actually really good, and it deserves all of its awards, and I can see why they studied at school. So,
okay.
Yeah. The last one is one called South Flows the Pearl by Mavis Gokyen. It is published by University Press. I forget which one. I was assigned it for a review, and it was... I don't know if it's out in shops yet or anything. I haven't seen it around, but it's, Mavis Gokyen is a Chinese heritage Australian woman who died, I think, 10 years ago when she spent years putting together this book full of interviews of Asian Australians who had been born in Australia or overseas and had lived here sort of spanning from the early 1900s through to the 80s. And she did a lot of interviews, often in Cantonese and in English, hearing their stories. Basically, they were the first generation after the gold rush. And so she has all these first-person accounts of what life was like for Asian Australians moving between Australia and China and Hong Kong in the earliest ages. And I didn't realize, I knew that there was strong Asian roots here that had been, but it's just, it's hard to sum up. Basically, I learned a lot. It was interesting, and it's first-person, which is rare, so... It's just this really well put together book that gives you an insight into a very different part of so-called Australia's history. So it's definitely worth a look. It reads like a series of interviews, but it's done well. And her daughter and son-in-law basically finished the project for her after she passed away. So yeah, it's kind of this nice sort of family project that also tells a story that would be lost otherwise. So, yeah. And a lot of the interviewees have also since passed away. So it's kind of it's really interesting. So it's called South Flows the Pearl. And that's, I think, one of the most under the radar books that I'm glad that I have read.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I'm going to put it on my to read list in the story graph. That's where Excellent. It's going to go. South Flows the Pearl. Is that the one?
Okay. By Mavis Gock-Yen.
I'm actually doing it now because I don't want to forget.
Nice.
That's terrible, isn't it? I shouldn't do that while we're doing a podcast. But
no, it's we've had a nice casual chat and we can write down things.
Those all sound great. And I'd only heard of one of them before, which is Cloud Street, which I did not study at school, possibly Same. Because I'm too old. And they weren't studying it at school until after I was at school. I'm not sure. What did we study? I don't remember any. I can't remember most of the novels we studied when I was in high school. We definitely did Zed is for Zachariah when I was like in year 7 or 8 or something, which is like a post-apocalyptic novel. Pretty good, actually, as I remember it. Has been adapted into a film.
You did Looking for Alibrandi in like year 8, I think.
Oh, yeah. Did we do that? I don't think we did that. I don't remember. I was doing 3 in English, which was sort of like fancy English, I guess. And I remember we did Utopias and Anti-Utopias. So we read like 1984, and this was in year 12, Utopia and Brave New World and The Handmaid's Tale. That was pretty good.
I did Brave New World, but I did that one by choice. Because in year 10, they gave us Lord of the Flies, I think.
Oh, we've talked about Lord of the Flies before. Yeah. Let's not go down that road. Then we really would be enemies.
But it's so good. But yeah, we had to choose a book to pair with it. So yeah.
I should reread it. It's like you were saying about Cloud Street, everyone who read it in school was like, oh, that's because it's not something you would have chosen, and you have that it's a very different feeling to read something that you didn't choose, particularly when you're probably not reading a lot and you might not have access to as many books and you don't know what you like, which is, you know, the most people's sort of status in high school.
And Cloud Street is long. Like, I'm shocked they did that for a school book, as in like, because it is... It's an epic book. It spans like multiple generations. It's just, it's pretty long. I don't know how they had time to read it at school.
Yeah. Wow. I see. So recently there was a book that a teacher had written that came into 100 Story Building where I work. And it was like a sort of a modern story. Like it was contemporary, but it was sort of based on, I forget which Shakespeare, but it was sort of vaguely based on one of the Shakespeare plays. And it had like little references to Shakespeare in it, which had sort of footnotes and stuff. And then he realized that was too long. So I forget what the original book was called, but then he did another version of the book where he edited it down to like half the length, and it was called the same title, but then subtitled Speed Run. And I was like, this is genius.
That's very good.
They need a Cloud Street Speed Run for schools.
That'd so be great.
Good. This has been a fun discussion. Thank you for that question, Belle. I know you've still got a few book-related questions, but we'll get to those. We'll get to them. If you've got a question for us that's not related to a specific book that you'd like to ask us, please send it in. We love getting questions from you. But we also like asking you questions, and sometimes we even get answers to those questions. So we previously asked whether any of you listen to other Pratchett podcasts. Well, there's no other Pratchett podcasts yet. Any other Terry Pratchett podcasts or Discworld podcasts. And we did get an answer from Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth, who says that she's reading along with The Truth Shall Make You Fret, who you've heard from Joe and Francine from The Truth Shall Make You Fret. And we know a few other subscribers and listeners do listen to them as well. But she's reading the books along with them because they're doing them in order, which we sort of do, but not really. And also they're not quite up as far as we are. So if you're starting from the start, it might work out better for you. And then she listens to our episode when she's finished reading the book with them, because they do each episode is, they do like 3 episodes for each book over 3 weeks, where they read the first third of the book, the middle third of the book, and the last third of the book. And then they sometimes have a bonus episode, but often they just have a week off, which is good. I think
that would deserve be nice. It. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They do great work. So thank you for letting us know that, Elizabeth. And Elizabeth also did send in, and we haven't really made a big thing of this, but we did read out a nice comment that someone sent on a previous episode. So Elizabeth also said, here's a quote for the people telling us how awesome we are section of the Oot Club, which you should totally make a regular feature. I don't know how, I don't know that we will. What do you think about this, Liz?
I am terrible at compliments, but I appreciate them. I just, you know, I always want to like tap them down by like saying, yes, but also here's all the terrible things about me.
So. Yeah, look, I understand that instinct because I have had it too, but it's important to acknowledge that people like what we do. I mean, that's the whole reason we're here, right? You are supporting us because you enjoy what we do. So it's nice to read out your feedback when it's positive and also when it's negative. If you have something you want to tell us that you'd like us to share or respond to, please send it in. But Elizabeth also said, thank you for all the work we put into the podcast. I've just spent my afternoon off listening to you guys discussing interesting times, and it's put a smile on my face. This is obviously from a little while ago. Your podcast lights up all the pratchety bits of my brain. Good fun, good humor, and good humans. Well, that's what a lovely sentiment. Thank you. I think that I enjoyed this comment because I feel like this is what we aim for, Liz. That's what we want to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's always like, I think I've said this before, but it always means a lot to hear like how people listen to it and how they interact with it. Because I think I couldn't possibly record the podcast without sort of imagining that no one listens to it, even though I know that people listen to it because we get such great questions, we have such a great community. But when we're actually recording, I have to sort of do that part of my brain. It's like, no, it's okay to just have a chat, because it's the same thing when you're in a live situation. You need to make it smaller to be able to, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, that's partly, and we bring different things to the podcast, right? And one of the things I like to think I bring is the reminder that there is someone listening who's not there. And I think that's important to remember, because some of the podcasts that I've listened to that I've sort of bounced off the hardest have been where the hosts are having a conversation and it feels like I'm excluded from it. Like it's full of in jokes and stuff where they're talking and they're not really sort of acknowledging that someone else is listening. And sometimes that works, but sometimes it's like, this is gross. I feel like I'm not really invited. Why do I need to be here? And I hope you never feel like that, listener. But it is important for us not to think about that too much, or it can derail the conversation. But thank you for that feedback, Elizabeth. We're glad to know you enjoyed it. And if you're reading along with The Truth Shall Make You Fret, then I'm very excited for you, because as we're recording this episode of Oot Club, they have just finished their 3 episodes about the Bromeliad trilogy. Instead of doing one episode, like 3 episodes about each book, because they're quite short, they did one episode about the trilogy. So there's one episode for Truckers, one for Diggers, one for Wings, which I am really looking forward to listening to, because they're some of my favorite Pratchett books ever. So I'm really looking forward to listening to that. It's going to be fun. Do we have any questions for listeners this episode, Liz? What do we want to hear from them? I'm going to ask like a slightly technical question. Now, we don't run ads on our podcasts, obviously, so this is not for market research purposes, but I am curious to know how you listen to the podcast, by which I mean, you know, what app do you use? What device do you use? I think I've asked this a little bit before and we got a couple of answers, but I would really love to know, when do you listen to it? Do you do it while you're walking? Do you listen to it a bit at a time? Do you like make a bit of time and sit down and listen to the whole thing in one go? I mean, it's a very long podcast. I wouldn't think many people do that, but maybe some people do. Just because I'm intrigued, and I've been thinking about it a lot, because with everything that's going on with Spotify, you know, we've been thinking about, should we stay on that platform or not? And this is a longer discussion that we won't have now in front of you. But I think probably where I've ended up is it's not really worth us getting off there, because there's a few hundred people listening to us on there, and it's not really going to do anything. But I would encourage you, not that this podcast is on Spotify, but I would encourage you, if you're listening to podcasts on Spotify, to maybe think about listening to them somewhere else, because you're supporting not only a company that's supporting people saying things that are harmful without any kind of checks or balances, but also a company that is doing real harm to the independent music industry by becoming so dominant in the space that people can't get paid for people listening to their music anymore. Because you do feel real pressure to be on Spotify so people can listen to you, but then you make no money out of people listening to you, which is fine if you're Madonna and a billion people stream your song every week and you've already made lots of money on it anyway. It's not so great when, you know, you're Georgia Fields, who is a great local artist here in Melbourne who I love and who is not going to have a million people listen to her, not because she's not great, but because the algorithm's not going to suggest her and she's just not going to get many streams. But the people who are listening to her on Spotify are not buying her album. So there's, you know, just think about it is all I'm asking. If it's the best for you, if it makes sense for you, I get it. Everyone's got to make their own decision, but just factor that in to your decision making. Anyway, but because of that, wow, I really went off on a tangent there, Liz. Sorry. But because of that, I've been thinking about, how do people listen to Pratchett? How do they experience it? And is there anything we could do to make that better for you? If there is, let me know. I'd love to know about it. So that's my sort of convoluted self-interest kind of question. But Liz, you've got a question. What do you want to ask the listeners?
It's a very straightforward one, sort of. It's not what is your favorite Terry Pratchett quote. It's if I came up to you in the street and said, say a Terry Pratchett quote, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Like, what's the one that's most stuck in your head? Because for me, the one that if someone said Terry Pratchett quote, it's he could think in italics. Such people need watching, preferably from a safe distance. And I love it, but it's not necessarily my favorite one. I've got so many, but for some reason, that is the one that swims to the top of my brain.
Mm, that's interesting. I think it's different for me each time. As you said that, what leapt to my mind was the Commander Samuel Vimes Boots theory of economic unfairness, which I'm probably mangling a bit there, but that was one that leapt to mind. But I think the one that more often would leap to mind would be there's no justice, there's just us. From Mort. I think that's the one that would immediately jump out at me. There's a couple of real zingers in Nightwatch.
Yeah.
Like there's the one about don't put your trust in revolutions because
that's why they're
called revolutions. They just always come around again. And I was like, that's nice. That's a neat turn of phrase. But we'll get into that when we actually record the Nightwatch episode. But that's a great question. Please send those in. Maybe we should put that one on Twitter too, Liz.
Yeah, I'm just really curious what people's like. The one that you can quote perfectly, but that isn't necessarily your favorite. The one that just is there.
It's interesting because like I have more of those from Douglas Adams, and I don't know if it's because he wrote fewer books that I've read more often. That I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it's definitely the Justice one for me. But there's probably a couple other ones that I can do. But that's the biggest one.
That's probably the one for me because I liked it so much at the time. I made it my email signature, so I saw it a lot. I think about all the people I emailed during that time who did not read Terry Pratchett and were kind of like, what is that? But yeah.
Yes. Well, I used to do much the same thing. I can't remember the quotes I used to put in my email signature. I had quite a few. I rotated through them. But look, before we wrap things up, we do like to share some extra stuff with you, our supporters, to say thank you. So some stuff that not everyone's going to hear, apart from just us rambling on. Some stuff we recorded with guests. And we've got a couple of bits that we want to share. One shorter one and one longer one. Should we share the shorter one first, Liz?
Yeah.
This is from as we record this, our most recent episode about The Watch. We ended up cutting a few things for time from this, one of which was a question that Fury, one of our guests, asked us.
If you could choose which book or narrative or plotline would be produced into a film next, what would you choose?
Is it by the same people or by people who know what they're doing?
People who know what they're doing is fine.
Okay.
But it's like, what do you think is most translatable? Because I think actually Guards and the Vimes plot aren't actually as translatable as some of the other books.
I think The Witches and or specifically the Tiffany Aching stuff, I think would work so well as a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, particularly the Tiffany A ones because they weren't written as long ago as a lot of the other stuff. So they're a bit more contemporary, but also there's just a lot of really cool, interesting stuff happening. And you'd have to cast, like you basically have to just cast mostly women and girls. And I'm like, just make that. It works. It's great. Just do it.
I think The Truth would be a good like standalone film or miniseries, like as a book, because it has a good plot structure, has good characters. They are mostly new ones, so that you don't have all of the, for lack of a better word, baggage of trying to do right by all the beloved characters in the same way you do as adapting a series. And I also would just love to see, I think there's a lot of potential to take in a lot of different interesting directions because you don't have to literally take every single scene from that for it to work. There's the core there that could be like realized in so many different ways.
I think probably I would choose Soul Music only because you could have the most fun with it. You could bend the narrative more. And because I think a lot of the people listening or watching would have some experience or knowledge of the music industry. So you could play with that more and change it more and people would be much more forgiving, especially if you could pepper it with jokes like Pratchett did.
Mm. Have you seen the animated adaptation?
Yes.
It's pretty straight to the book, but the music is pretty good.
Mm.
But it is drawing on the influences from the book rather than modernizing it. So
yeah.
I stand by my answer. I would love to see a Tiffany Aching TV show. I think that would be amazing.
I mean, I think there's a lot of pun potential with the truth, like the whole truth, nothing but the truth. And if it is nothing but the truth, then no one else can have an adaptation, so.
Well, you could make such a good TV series, though, out of it as well. I think it is also a really good suggestion, because you could do so many ongoing stories that you could do.
I just want all of them, to be honest, like all of them. And also, well, you know, like
who knows?
An assassin's boy's own.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of, you know, that building on pyramids and also Night Watch. But yeah, building on pyramids, I think that'd be good.
Yeah. That was nice to revisit that in Night Watch, but we'll talk about that in the Night Watch episode. But there's another bit we want to share. This one's quite a bit longer and a little bit special because it's not just us either.
So this is from a chat we had with Joe and Francine of The Truth Shall Make You Fret for a part of the Ogg's Watch Feast. So there's quite a lot in here because we had a lot to talk about. And honestly, we could have talked to them all day. So have a listen.
Yeah. What a time to be alive.
Yeah.
I must say the podcast helped a lot during the bad couple of years and the lockdown and I don't know about you guys, but having a scheduled, we have to talk for a couple hours definitely helped.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It kept us functioning.
Yeah. And I think because obviously you're saying that it's always there. I kind of feel like that, even though we only do it monthly, because We're always thinking ahead to, all right, we've got to find a guest, we need to schedule the guest, we've got to read the book, yeah. We've got to make the notes.
Yeah, and you do a lot of research for each episode, whereas ours are split into thirds, so you guys have a lot more prep time, I'm guessing, for each episode.
I don't do that much research before we record. Like, I do a fair bit. Like, I try to look up stuff that I'm like, oh, I'm going to want to talk about that, so I should know about it. But then I also have gotten just quite relaxed with, look, well, I'll do my best, but the show notes is where I'll put in most of that sort of research effort. I think that I've realized that the impetus is to be interesting while you're talking and not necessarily correct, as long as you are okay with saying when you're not sure about something and then you go and research it and you have written somewhere, yeah, I was wrong about this. And, you know, obviously if it's something important, you get it correct on there, you know, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. No, your show notes are very impressive.
They're ridiculous. Don't encourage me. They're so...
Oh, no, no.
They're very good, Ben.
They are. Ours vary incredibly from week to week, depending on what time I finish editing the main podcast. So,
yeah.
Because most of our show notes consist of like a tiny me writing a ridiculous 3-word summary and then just a lot of links. So there have been times where we've finished recording, I've immediately gone into our show notes doc and thrown in the first 3 words from the podcast I can remember and gone, well, at least that bit's done in case I don't get to listen to the episode until 10 o'clock on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Which is hardly ever Francine's fault and usually me forgetting even when she sends me the episode that it's got to go out in 2 hours and I should probably listen to it.
I stay up later than Joanna, and occasionally at 11:30, I go, she's probably fallen asleep and upload it for her. But
there was only one time I fell asleep in the process of uploading it.
Oh, right.
This is why I never use the laptop on the sofa. I can't stay on the desk.
Yeah, I think buying like a monitor and having a proper desk, like, workplace in my home has been one of the best things to come out of this otherwise entirely nonsense.
It was such a treat setting up a desk and setting it like, oh.
See, in place of a desk, I have a very large sewing table, the corner of which is going to become a desk when my computer finally turns up. But for now, it is laptop on nearest available flat surface where I won't get a bad back.
You are nanny organ development stages, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much. It's pretty much my dream career is nanny org.
Except without all the children.
Yeah, without the children.
Or if you skip to the bit where they help you.
If I can somehow acquire a bunch of daughters-in-law without actually having children of my own, that would be ideal.
Yeah. You need to marry somebody with grown-up children.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Maybe for my third husband.
Yeah.
That's a good goal.
It's very efficient.
Yeah.
The first time Francine started working on transcribing fully one of our episodes, she did get very, very distracted by learning a very obscure, archaic form of shorthand.
Which didn't help because I was meant to be... Well, I started trying to write this like shorthand script on the computer and I was like, you know what? I never did learn proper shorthand and I should do that. Like, I'll get that in finally. And then I picked one that I liked the look of and spent ages on that and then realized it was developed specially for the clergy in Victorian times and it wasn't great. And then trailed off into not doing the transcript for another few months. But
you did make me a really cute get well soon card with a poem written in that weird archaic shorthand, though. Yeah, so it wasn't a total waste.
I just love hearing stories of your friendship. It's very heartwarming. Liz, why don't we have stories like this? We need to make stories like this.
Fine, I'll force something good.
How long have you guys known each other?
We do have good stories.
10 years?
Yeah. 10 years? Yeah, I think that's about right. We met at a mutual friend's housewarming when you were moving in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
No,
you weren't, but you almost did. Is that right? Why can't I remember this story?
Because it's really weird that I was there. I went to the housewarming at a house that I'd applied to be a housemate at.
That's right.
They'd rejected me, but they invited me to the the housewarming of the person who got it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to come to this.
But that was when you first moved to Melbourne, right?
To lean into the awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad I did. I made so many friends like that night. Okay. It's like the sort of thing that I absolutely would not do now, but yeah.
No.
But we must have known each other before, because I remember you had alerted me to a spam bot that was spamming from my Twitter.
I'm just trying to think if there's anything I wanted to ask you. Or do you want to ask us anything?
Oh, I've got a proper Fratchety Australian question.
Oh yeah, hit us.
What do you guys think of The Last Continent? How do you think of your portrayal in that book?
This is great. Like, I feel like we're
on. And if you've done an episode on that, I'm sorry, I haven't listened to it yet.
No. We've kind of done two, because we guested on one of the American Pratchett podcasts when they did it. So I feel like we talked about it. But I kind of like that if someone wants to know, we're the people you ask.
You are the Australian Pratchett consultants.
Yeah. Try. There are two other Australian Pratchett podcasts, although one of them produced one episode and then seems to have disappeared.
There's a lot of those, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's another one which is two academics from Adelaide. I think possibly even the same university that awarded Terry Pratchett an honorary degree. So
we've only got three universities in Adelaide, so
yeah. So it's
so there's one in three chance.
Once, yeah, that's good odds. What do we think of it, Liz?
Because it's interesting to see how we are seen from the outside. So, like, what element he chose to augment. So, like, it is very obviously, like, caricaturized. But I don't know if an Australian author had been putting forward, a Discworld version of this. I'm not sure it would have been the same. So, it's, I guess, it's interesting to see what elements seem Australian from the outside.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's a loving send-up.
Yeah,
for sure. He wrote about Australia a few times in his nonfiction stuff as well. Like, if I mean, like, he clearly loved Australia and loved the fans there who kept bringing banana daiquiris.
And I love that we get a book. But yeah,
yeah,
and no, all that, of our like legends.
Yeah, I mean, more than any other author, like he came here all the time. Like, it was weird. Like, it seemed there was a period where it seemed like he was here every year, but I'm pretty sure he only came every 2 years. And very cunningly, when I was at university, I knew he was coming, and I was like, right, this year our theatre society is doing Mort, and we're going to do it around the time he's here, and then we can go and fly the crowds, and it worked. We sold out. It was great.
Fantastic.
The play was actually all right. It was my first time directing, okay. So I was like, okay, all right. And I was hardly in it, but it was, so that was nice. But it's this weird thing where all of the sources it draws on are all the things that we kind of do love, but also, I mean, it's so specific. Like, there's a whole sequence, which is the man from Snowy River. And I'm like, surely no one outside of Australia has even heard of this, like, let alone knows what is being parodied here. So I thought that was
Yeah,
weird.
We haven't got to that one yet. And I'm not sure what would the man from Snowy River.
Yeah.
Poem, which you can.
Yes. It's
a songs as versions as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a TV show and a film version. But the annotated Pratchett file is pretty good on Last Continent. It's got most of them.
Cool.
But I think it's got most of this is what this is, but not necessarily this is how Australians feel about it. Which is
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? I try not to look at the annotated Pratchett file until after I've picked what I'm looking at, in case I just end up just copying it completely.
I try and plan our episodes, and then I go through annotated.
But for some reason, it doesn't count if I just copy off you guys. That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I started putting a link to it in our notes just so that we don't
say things that are in it as if they're a great revelation, whereas a large proportion of our listeners will already know it because it's in there.
Yeah.
But we're now past the point that it covers, or nearly, because it only goes up to about, the next book we're doing after this is Wintersmith, and I think I don't think there is an entry for Wintersmith or the couple before that. So I think it only goes up to about Thief of Time. Maybe
they're
the
very
last
limited
year.
On the proto Pratchett ones as well, to the point where I was considering putting something together about Strata and Dark Zeta's Son, just because we spent so long doing research into the references.
Oh yeah, I would love to see that. The L-Space wiki does have quite a lot of annotations on them, but they're kind of a little bit hidden away.
Yeah,
not necessarily those books, but it's got a lot of other annotations, but they're kind of a bit ad hoc because nobody's kind of organized them. It's just been written by whoever's been interested at the time.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. You enjoy stuff like, because it just sort of references famous paintings and like Waltzing Matilda and this stuff that you just don't realize has made it out of your country into like the consciousness of other people. And that's kind of cool to see. Like, like what I said before, it's interesting to see what's made it out. Like, I don't understand why Vegemite is such a thing that people think about, because you guys have got Marmite. It's basically the same.
Yeah.
Apparently,
how dare
not.
You? It's
my
really
best
not.
Mate loves Vegemite, like loves it. She lived in Australia for a year or so, and she still misses Vegemite terribly.
It's so good.
My dad is English, and his brother used to, when we moved to Australia, used to mail him Marmite from England every like couple of months to make sure he's so like it isn't the same. I realize like, cause otherwise my dad would have just had Vegemite.
I mean,
it's
all fairly revolting if you ask me, but
in terms of strong flavors it's not that different, so
but feel free to raid our notes for that. Mm-hmm. I have tried Bovril once back before I was a vegetarian. It was actually surprisingly nice.
Did you know that it was originally called Johnston's Fluid Beef?
No, but that's my new favorite thing.
Yeah, the name Bovril comes from a sci-fi. Vril was one of those sci-fi terms. I've forgotten which book it was exactly, but it
that
was it was a life force thing in the time machine, something like that.
Yes, I think that's right.
We don't have a love-hate relationship. We have a fluid beef.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Oh my god, yes, I love that. Yeah. My husband absolutely loves Bovril anyway, so which is why it's so much of it just sticks to everything, and I hate it very much in kind, but I will tell him that pun. That's great.
Oh, that was so much fun, Liz.
Yeah, we could honestly just have a big long chat with them. I could talk to them all day. They're great.
Well, we'll definitely have to figure out some way or some excuse for us to chat again. Maybe we can even organize to do some sort of special episode, like a club crossover with them, because they have a Patreon. If you do listen to the Truth Shall Make You Fret, they also have totally got a Patreon, so you can support them too, and they put exclusive stuff on that. And in fact, you might have heard some of this discussion in there if you also support them, but please do if you listen to them. It really helps when we're making a podcast to know that at least some of the time we put into it is going to be sustainable. So maybe we can do some sort of crossover with them. I think that would be fun.
What is this, a crossover episode?
yes, it would be. and I think that would be great fun. So we should do that. We should definitely do that. But I think that's it for this episode of Book Club. If there's anything you'd like us to talk about on this show, let us know. We could use with a few more questions. We've got a few left, but I think we could use some more Book Club questions. And look, if you're reading something for the challenge, let us know what it is. Because you don't have to join up to the Storygraph to get involved. You can just do it on your own. There's a page on the website with all the prompts on it. So you can do it through there. But let us know. And until next time, just wait for another episode of Pratchett. I don't know. What are we don't sign this off that way, do we?
So I'm just like sitting here with simmering tension because my cats are doing the about to fight dance. So I'm just are they going to start yowling? Is that an outro? Who knows?
I don't know either. But we better cut to the egg outro music, Liz.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to take another photo and then I'll be ready. Sorry. It's just so cute. I cannot...
That's going at the end of the episode. You know that, right?
No.
That little snippet of audio.
Oh, I can send the picture too.